Greetings to each of you in Jesus' name. Count it a privilege to be here and to worship the Lord together with you as saints. It's a cold morning out there, but appreciate the warm fellowship of the saints here. For a message this morning, I'd like your help to start out. Who can tell me which two miracles are mentioned in each of the four Gospels? Two miracles. I didn't check it out. Of course, it'd take quite a bit of time, but I read in my studies that there are two miracles mentioned in each of the Gospels, and they're the only two. I'll give you a hint. The resurrection is one of them, and that's not what I'm thinking of. Do you know which other miracle is mentioned in all of the four Gospels? I know that's probably a difficult question. Anyone want to take a stab at it? You can turn to John chapter 6. The feeding of the 5,000. John chapter 6. I'm doing a rerun of a message that I had at a baptismal. And that night we were focusing on three young souls. And yet I believe that as we start another year, as we think of our lives, I think that each of us can think that we're young. It's kind of interesting how that is. Anyone my age and younger is young, and anyone much older than me and older is definitely old. You know how that goes. You kind of gauge off of where you are in life, and anyone your age or younger is young. And so I think most of us this morning probably think of ourselves as young folks, you know. But sooner or later we start to realize that, you know what, I'm wearing out. And you're somewhere in that journey. We're not going to be here forever, and our age tells us that. Let's read John chapter 6. We're going to read verses 1 through 14. John chapter 6, verse 1. After these things, and I will simply interject here, it's not mentioned here in John, but in some of the other Gospels, it mentions that Herod had just beheaded John the Baptist, and his disciples had taken and buried his body, and this was a pretty, it was pretty difficult for Jesus over this time. And so after these things, it's what just had preceded this, this account here. And after these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great multitude followed him, because they saw his miracles which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat? And this said he to prove him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what are they among so many? And Jesus said, Make the men sit down. Now there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down in number about 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves when he had given thanks. He distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down. And likewise of the fishes, as much as they would. When they were filled, he said unto his disciples, Gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, This is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. For a message title, there would be several options. We could simply say, A Lad and a Lunch. We could say, Hungry People, A Lad and a Lunch, or the title I've chosen, which basically just breaks into the different parts of the message, is Hungry people, Jesus, a lad, and a lunch. Basically describes what happens. And I know that's probably not a very conventional title. Hungry people, Jesus, a lad, and a lunch. First of all, hungry people. Here we have a whole group of people crowding after Jesus. Why were they coming to Jesus? Well, we know it says that they saw the miracles that he did, and I believe that many of these people came with their own needs. And they weren't there with Jesus many hours or days until they had more needs. Hungry people, I'd like to think of that a little bit this morning. Hungry people. Here in this story, there were many hungry people, but we live in a world full of needy people. It is simply a fact of life that people have needs. They came to Jesus because they have had physical needs. People here needed bread. They followed him because they needed physical healing. There are many infirmities and needs that people have that are physical needs. Even beyond that, people have needs. People have spiritual needs. We live in a world full of people that have spiritual needs. We have spiritual needs as well. We have emotional needs. We have many other needs that don't always fall into a distinct category, whether they're real or whether they're perceived. Sometimes people have needs. They think they need something, but they don't really need what they think they need. We look at that in this morning's lesson of Esau. What did Esau really need? He needed something way more than that bowl of pottage. He needed something so much more than the physical. His real needs were spiritual. And we live in the land where the same is today. You think of everything that people had on their wish list for Christmas. How many of those were really needs? Were their real needs met when they got what they wanted or when they didn't get what they wanted? And we're not really responsible for all the people out there, but what about you and I? What are our needs? And what are we doing, more importantly, what should we do with the people needs around us? What are we doing with the people needs around us? And that's the primary focus of this message. The possible responses to the needs of humanity. I would like to look at, I believe it's five responses. Five possible responses. We see here the people had a need. They needed bread and they needed lots of it. 200 penny worth would never be enough. And what was there didn't seem sufficient. We'll look at that a little bit later. What are the responses? When you hear someone say, I'm hungry, maybe it's a beggar that you find downtown somewhere, and he comes with his hand out held, I'm hungry, can you give me some money? What's your response? When the neighbor next door says they have a need, what's your response? There are at least five different responses, and they fit into, I would say, two different categories. The first one we could think of, the first response to I'm hungry, is apathy. Apathy. We see here, or maybe it's in, I know it's over in Mark chapter 6, it says, the disciples said, send them away. Send them away. You're hungry? Oh, well, that's too bad. Go find something to fill your stomach. The rationale is, you know, that's his problem, and it's not my problem. And so we separate ourselves, we distance ourselves from the person in their need. And the bottom line is, if it's somebody else's problem, it is not my problem. We could call that apathy. Who cares? You know, just like the, when the robbers fell upon the man and he was in the ditch, the ones that went by and passed by on the other side, they really didn't care. It's not my problem today, that's his problem. And there's apathy and then there's worse. And we could look at worse responses yet than apathy. But moving in a different direction, we have this English word called sympathy. Hungry? Oh my, I'm sorry to hear that you're hungry. Sympathy starts to feel for the need. Start to imagine what you're going through. But the sympathy says that, you know, I'm sorry that you're hungry. I hope you find some food. I hope you find an answer to your problem. And sympathy, in its definition, it feels for the need. And your feelings become involved, but sympathy can stop there. I feel bad for them. It carries the need in our hearts. But does it stop with sympathy? Then there's this thought of empathy. Are you hungry? You know, I know what that feels like. And it starts to enter into feeling with the person, to feel with somebody. Not just feel bad for them, but to feel with them. You know, your stomach probably aches. Are you starting to get weak yet? Starting to feel like you're weak. And it gets next to the person and it starts to fill a supportive role. To feel with the person and to empathize with them. To fill a supportive role, to support them in their struggle. Do you know of any place to get food? Empathy is to feel with them, not simply for them. Maybe to involve yourself in a conversation with them. Then we have this thing of compassion. Are you hungry? What can I do about it? It takes the need upon ourselves. Compassion. I will do my best to fill the need. What are my resources? And we start to open our wallet and say, you know what? How much is in here? Can we take care of this problem? These are the things that happen in our heart, whether it's apathy, sympathy, empathy, compassion. But finally, each of these things that happen in the heart come out in the way that we respond. And the fifth one, the fifth response I'd like to think of is sacrificial giving. Are you hungry? Here we had the 5,000 people. What would the lad do about it? I will take your need and make it mine. Here's what I have. Take what I have. Take mine. It's now yours. Take it to fill your need. Just for illustration, I heard the story recently of a man who had a pickup, and it was an older pickup. In fact, it was worn out and it was shot. And the transmission went out on this pickup. And I don't even know the brother, I simply heard the account. The transmission went out on the pickup, and he looked at his financial resources, and he said, you know what, I don't have the financial resources to go buy another one, but I think I can scrape enough up to fix the transmission. I think there's enough life in the truck that it'll go a little more if we simply fix the transmission, maybe get a used transmission. Not sure exactly what he did, but he took it to the transmission shop, and some of the brothers in the church found out about it, that, you know what, there's a man here with a need. And so they started talking about this. What can we do to help our brother? And they counseled together, and then they reached out to another brother who incidentally had just ordered himself a truck according to his specifications. And upon hearing the need, he decided to give his ordered truck to this man in need. And so he did. And as the truck was in the repair shop, they simply arranged for the man to pick it up or delivered it. I'm not sure exactly of all those details. But the man was presented with this brand new pickup and a replacement for his old beater. The man was very humbled, and yet he was very grateful for his caring brothers. And he felt blessed way beyond measure because somebody stepped forward to give. You say, well, that is not even reasonable, you know. When somebody has a need, you don't have to just overflow them with blessings. And yet, this happened in a church where people evidently cared about each other. And I believe that it was definitely a sign of the love they had in their heart. So back to the story. Sacrificial giving. We'll look at that maybe just a little bit more later. But those are the basic the basic responses, possible responses, to fill the need regardless of the cost, at my cost. Well, then in this story, we have this man called Jesus. Jesus. You know, if Jesus wasn't in this story, what would have happened? If Jesus would not have been here and the power that he has, I believe that a lot of people would have gone home hungry. But Jesus made the difference in this situation. And I believe this morning that one of the truths we can learn in our lives is that Jesus still makes a difference in our lives today. And if we're looking for answers outside of Jesus, we're not going to find them. There were options here, but the answer was Jesus. And I believe that one of the truths that we can learn from this passage is that Jesus is the bread of life. We see in verse 14 that what he did was evidence that he was the prophet that should come into the world. And from that, if you go on to verse 15, based on what happened here, there was a whole group of people that were ready to make this man king. But Jesus slipped away. Because it was not the kind of kingdom that he was intending to set up, the kind of kingdom that they were looking for. And I believe that today Jesus is still the answer. He's the answer physically. If you have a physical infirmity, I believe that it's right to ask Jesus to answer the need. We know also that he is the spiritual answer to our lives. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life." Here in verse 6, we see Jesus saying, "And this he said to prove himself, for he knew himself what he would do." First of all, he asked the question, "When shall we buy bread?" He got them thinking, "How can we supply the need?" And why did he ask the question? Because he wanted them to use their resources, and I think he wanted to show himself as the answer to the need. It was a way for him to declare himself as the answer to man's problems. He was not limited like they were, but he cared just as much about or more about the need. "I am the bread of life." Jesus cares about people's needs. Jesus had the physical bread, and he also was the spiritual bread. And this morning, I believe that we must be convinced in any situation to look to Jesus when we have a need and go to him as our resource. I would like to look at what we know what happened next. As they inquired to fill the need, I don't know exactly how it happened, but one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, came and said, "You know, there's a lad here who has a lunch. But among so many people, what is this?" What are they? "This is never going to work. You know, we got limited." I think it was basically saying we have very limited resources. And I would like to look next at this lad, verse 9. There is a lad here. The lad. The lad and I, making comparison to from his life to your life and my life. And I would like to first of all mention, bring out the thought here that the lad carried the provision of his parents. The lad carried the provisions of his parents. You know, as the young man headed out the door that day, there's a lot of details that we don't know about. Who packed his lunch? Very likely his mother packed his lunch and sent him out the door that day. And I would like to think about the fact that, you know, we as parents give a lot of provisions. We make a lot of provisions and we put a lot of effort into our children's lives. We must. And they will be a product of what we put into them. You know, like it or not, there are some people here who are what they are because of what their parents put into them, who are not what they are because of what their parents didn't put into them. Yes, we all have our personal choice, and I don't want to teach it out of balance, but there are some convictions that our children will carry or won't carry because of what we teach them. as they go out the door, even by way of physical provisions, this young man went taking and carrying a lunch because of what his mother put into him. And like it or not, this morning, there are people here carrying their resemblance, possibly physically. You know, we all carry, you know, maybe can tell, you know, you're a Gaiman, or you're a Nolt, or you're a Martin, or you're a, you know, go down the list. People can tell where we fit in, and that's a good thing with physical resemblance. There's also characteristics that we carry because of the family that we come out of, because of what our parents taught us or didn't teach of us. And we can't change necessarily what we've received, but as parents, we can change what we send our children out with, out of our homes from day to day. And then finally, as we turn them loose, because they've matured as an adult or married and started their own home, we can turn them loose confident that we've given them something that will take them through. What have we given our children? What are we giving our children to us as parents? It's a solemn responsibility that we carry as we think of those sending, but also as we think of caring. You know, there are things that people have invested into us that we are responsible to carry, that we are stewards of. And this young man was a steward of his lunch. This young man was a steward of his lunch. Maybe backing up to the thought of parents, what are your dreams for your children? Who would you like, what would you like your children, your child to become? What are your goals for them? Is it a good farmer? Is it a strong businessman? Is it a great hunter? Do we have visions on those kind of levels? Or do we have a vision on a higher level? You know, I want my son to serve God wherever he goes. And I pray that he could be an evangelist, a missionary, a pastor or a deacon, or even just a strong person. Whatever God wants for him, I think should be basically our desire. You know, we want him to be whatever he can be for God and allow God to fill in the blank. But what are we pointing our children towards? We can push them in some direction. Secondly, we have the lad. The lad became aware of the needs of people. You know, very likely he started to hear children whine and complain. You know, Mom, I'm hungry. The cries of the children. And he became aware of the fact that his lunch was pretty valuable. His lunch was pretty valuable that day. Why? Because he opened his ears to the needs of the people. And I believe that that's a lesson for us. You know, we must open our ears, our eyes, and our hearts to the needs of people around us. Are there any needy people in your community? Is there any needy person here? I don't know the community out here. Are there people with needs? Do you know about the needs? Just heard about a fire. Should you care? Well, that's their problem, right? Do we open our eyes, ears, and hearts to the cries of the needy? We see here the disciples did, but too often we spend too little time considering the needs of other people. And we close our ears and we close our hearts. You know, in the amount of time from when you ate breakfast till now, trying to think back to what time it is here, even just from the time you were on your way to church until right now, the last 2 hours, in that amount of time, 720 people, approximately, the rate people die around the world of starvation and its effects, 720 people have died in the last 2 hours of starvation or its effects around the globe. What are we doing about that? Are we aware of the needs? Thirdly, we notice that the lad considered the request for his lunch. It doesn't tell us exactly what his response, how he became aware of the possibilities for his lunch and what he did with it, exactly how that all transpired. But what was his response? Did they come asking, "Hey, you have a lunch there. We need to disperse some food." And what did he do? Did he clutch the bag, the lunch bag? Did he clutch that even harder? "No, you're not taking it from me." Did they have to squeeze his wrist? You know, that's something that when you have boys, my sons have boys that are my age. You know, they try to show how that, you know, different things of the physical body and competition and so forth. You know, if you squeeze your wrist hard enough, you just have to let go. Is that what they did? They came and they squeezed his wrist till he let go of his lunch, and then they tore it away. You know, what am I going to eat if I give up my lunch? How do we consider the requests that come to us? You know, brother or sister, you have something that is needed. We have the needs on the mission field. We have the needs of the Bible school. We have the congregational needs, a brother that's hurting. How hard does the Lord have to pry for what's in my hand? You know, when the CAM paper comes around and you see all the needs of the children around the world, what's my response? Well, there's lots of other people. We must consider the requests that come to us and respond in faith. Maybe it's a call to teach school. Maybe it's a call to go with CAM for relief work. You know, there's quite a large list of needs. What do we do with the request? Do we consider them or do we just write it off? Well, it doesn't fit into my agenda today. You know, if this boy gave his lunch away, what was he going to eat? And so we realize that fourthly, the lad gave sacrificially. The lad gave sacrificially. He gave up his own food. You know, when he gave up his 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, when he gave it up, what in the world was he going to eat? He gave sacrificially. He gave up his lunch. He didn't have his lunch. Or did he? You know, from a natural standpoint, he did not have his lunch anymore. He had given it sacrificially, and yet we realize, fifthly, that the lad saw Jesus multiply his meager supply, and what he had given, he received back, and he could have eaten much more if he wanted to, and it was all there. What he had given, he received back, and much more. One of the things that I'd like to bring out under this is that, and I don't know how it is for you, but oftentimes when we see a need, you look at the need, and the need here was 5,000 people, and it's easy to think like the disciples did. But what's that among so many people? Among the need, it is nothing. You know, the need for the offering is somewhere around $500,000, whatever it is. You know, brotherhood sharing just keeps climbing and climbing. And the need's so high, and I have so little. And so we say, well, it's nothing compared to the need, and so I'm not going to give it. I can't fill the need, and so I'll give nothing. How often does that happen? I can't fill the need, and so I'll give nothing. You know, the little boy, he saw the need, and he said, well, I can't take care of all of it, but I can give you this much. And I think that often it's that way in our lives. As parents, we say, well, I don't know what to do for my child. I don't know how to do what I really need to do as a parent to meet the needs of my children. And so, do we settle for nothing? I can't do it all, and so I'll do nothing. Well, the man next door, the person who just lost his wife or his husband or whatever it is, you know, we go to the other side of the street. We go the other way and we let them suffering because I don't know what to do. I don't feel like I can, I can't do everything, and so I do nothing. Is that the right response? We see it's not. Let's give the little that we have and trust Jesus to that as we give it, Jesus can multiply what we're giving to supply the need. And that's one of the tremendous lessons out of this story, is that a little as it's given to Jesus and through Jesus, God, I'm giving this to you, and I ask you to multiply this to the need. And then how many times the little things as they're given become a big blessing. We must trust Jesus to multiply our meager supply to the needs of others. We also see in this story, and I know that the lad probably didn't understand all this, but I believe that we can today. We must trust Jesus to meet our needs with a diminished supply. You know, sometimes we say, well, if I give it, then I won't have it, just like the lad did. What am I going to do? Can we also trust Jesus with our needs if we've given the way we're called to give? It's amazing how many times, I remember not that long ago, I had a list of about four things that seemed like they were just pressing needs. And I took them to God in prayer, and it was amazing how that in a little bit of time, God had taken care of those needs for me. And things that we say, well, I can't do this because of this, but we don't know what God's going to do to take care of the needs that we have. Seventhly, we see that the lad went home blessed with the joy of giving. I don't know what it was like that evening, but you can only imagine as the boy ran home to tell his parents what had happened that day, and he burst in the door, Mom, Dad, do you have any idea what Jesus did with my lunch? Guess what happened? It fed, you know, it says here that the men sat down, and the men group, there was about 5,000 people, plus women and children, it easily could have been a group of 12 to 15,000 people. Very possibly could have exceeded that. The little boy's lunch fed that many people that day. And as he burst in the door, I believe that there was a joy that welled up in his heart, a peace and a satisfaction that I did what I could and God did this with what I have given. And when we have given what we have to others, I believe that our hearts will be just as full of joy. I remember Peter and John, remember the story. Silver and gold have I none, but what I have give I unto thee. There are many different ways that we can give this coming year. And I believe that there are ways that far supersede the physical, the monetary. You know, when the offering basket's passed, it's good to give what you can. But that's not the only way of giving. There are many hurting people that need a listening ear, that need an encouraging word. There are people who are struggling to find the way, and they need an older person to come and say, you know, I was young once too. I've faced what you're facing, and this is what I did, and this is what God showed me to do, and this is what the Bible teaches us to do. And I believe that this has yielded results. There are many, many ways that we can give. But the question is, will we give? What are we going to do with the opportunities that come our way? You know, I'm convinced that God has given us needs according to His resources. The resources that He has. And I even look at the needs of the conference and the needs of different congregations. And I know how that one congregation might have more needs than another, but I believe that God has given those needs to be supplied by another. And I believe that it goes both ways. And I really believe that the needs of our conference, that God has given the resources for those needs within the conference. The question is, will we give what God has given us so that He can multiply it to meet those needs? Well, God bless you this year as you live out this kind of commitment. we be willing to give what God has given us to the needs of those around us. With these thoughts in mind, let's kneel for prayer.